Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Chris Sidorick. It's mid-August, which means we have just a few precious weeks left to get to the beach or a favorite camping spot, and also a last chance to check out some summer movies. As we're coming into the final few weeks of the summer movie season, we wanted to take a look at some of the highs and lows, and to do that, we're joined in studio now by Ty Burke, film critic and cultural columnist for the Boston Globe. Ty, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chris. Good to be here.
So give us your reaction first to this summer season of movies. What's your overall take?
It's been kind of a disappointing season for Hollywood at the box office, and I think it's, generally speaking, been kind of a disappointing season for moviegoers as well. In terms of box office, a lot of the things that people expected were sure bets. I mean, you know, we know that summer means sequels, remakes, reboots, franchise installments. Those aren't playing as much anymore, with a couple of notable exceptions. There was a new Godzilla movie. You figure that would make some money. Nope, tanked. There was a new X-Men movie, Dark Phoenix. Figure that would, you know, bring in the fans. Nope, tanked. On the other hand, you had a movie like The Lion King, which is the biggest moneymaker of the summer and possibly the year. And I cannot, for the life of me, understand the success of this movie. It is the exact same movie that was the cartoon they made however many years ago. They just made it digitally animated, quote, live action, except lions
don't
actually sing and talk.
Oh, you're destroying the magic of the movie.
Sorry, kids. Spoiler alert.
All right, so we'll get to the success of The Lion King, but I want to start with those couple of failures you mentioned, because I found it really interesting that an X-Men movie, Dark Phoenix, that you referenced, made just $65 million. That's been a hugely successful franchise. What do you make of the fact that this one didn't connect?
A couple of things. I think we're seeing franchise exhaustion. We're seeing that particular one starred Sophie Turner, who is a TV star from Game of Thrones, but maybe not yet a movie star. But I think the real story that's going on is that people are staying home to watch series and movies on streaming TV. It has to be something special to get them out to the theater. Right. It has to be either, you know, the last of the Avengers movies that they've been building up to for 14 years, or again,
last of in quotes,
yes,
because
exactly.
They also just announced Phase 4 there. You also mentioned a monster that has traditionally been pretty strong at the box office. Let's take a listen to the trailer here.
Is there another creature that might stand a chance against him?
So I have to be real with you for a second.
Yeah.
I didn't even know there was another Godzilla movie out this summer.
Well, there's a problem right there.
Yeah.
There was a marketing campaign. They did try and drum up awareness. Again, it's a franchise that may be on its last scaly legs. I mean, people have moved on. It would have to be something. And you would think a Godzilla movie is one that you would have to see in the theater. People are choosing no.
Yeah. So, all right, let's get to the one that you mentioned that has done extremely well, and that is The Lion King. And as you mentioned, it does use some pretty familiar language and imagery and even a familiar voice that you might recognize from the 1994 animated version.
Everything you see exist together in a delicate balance. While others search for what they can take, a true king searches for what he can give.
All right, so what do you make of... all right, go ahead. Just go ahead. I see you shaking your head.
The history of Disney as a corporate creative entity in the last 30, 40 years is their geniuses at repulping and reintroducing their content, their properties for new audiences, for new generations.
But what's wrong with that? You're talking about a generation of millennials who now have kids. They want to bring
their kids. There isn't anything wrong with that. I remember in the VHS era, they would keep all their crown jewels off video and re-release them every 7 years.
Into the Disney vault.
And this is the same version of that. Now they're making all of their cartoons into digitally animated, quote, live action versions. I have nothing against it other than the fact that this takes away from original storytelling. And it feels like a Xerox to me. It's the same movie. It's the same movie, but visually it's quite splendid. And it is something that I guess people who grew up with the original movie can take their kids to. And it's newer. I don't know if it's better, but it's newer and new trumps better in the marketplace, I guess.
So we've seen a couple of these now come out. Obviously, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin. We know that Disney's working on Lady and the Tramp and Ariel and a movie about Cruella de Vil. What's the end of this? Is it just they make these until they stop making money?
They make them until they stop making money or until a new technology comes along that allows them to start the cycle again. So when we get 3D holographic, you know, put on the Holo Helmet movies, they'll start making, you know, Dumbo for that.
All right. So I want to ask about another side of Disney, because I know one that you actually felt was a pretty solid film, Toy Story 4.
Yes.
What's the difference there?
The difference is, well, you know, I would say it's the Pixar magic, although Pixar has fallen off, I think, in the last 10 years, before, you know, from its first decade. But it still makes, you know, movies, family movies that literally the entire family can enjoy, adults as well as kids. The bar is still set high. And Toy Story in particular, I had my doubts, if only because this was a sequel that was really ordered up by the brain trust at Disney, who owns the rights to the characters. And I think there was some resistance. If you saw Toy Story 3, that looked like a final movie.
Yeah.
But they have reinvented it and found the soul again. The thing about those movies is that they're funny and soulful and the characters have depth, which is pretty ironic considering that they're toys.
That's true. I never really thought about it that way. So let's shift gears and talk about a movie that's very much not for the children. And that's Quentin Tarantino's new film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Let's play a quick clip from the trailer here.
I'm Rick Dalton. It's my pleasure, Mr. Schwartz.
Call me Marvin. Put it there. That's your son?
No, it's my stunt double, Cliff Booth.
Last night, we watched a Rick Dalton double feature. All the shooting. I love that stuff, you know, the killing.
A lot of killing.
Very much a Quentin Tarantino vehicle, obviously. Right. What did you make of this film?
Well, I find... I love the movie. I think it's one of Tarantino's better movies. I think it's one of his most audience-friendly movies. It's funny, you play that clip, it makes it sound like it's typical Tarantino violence. Really, there's violence in the movie, but it really only comes at the end and not the way you're expecting if you go in knowing the history of the Manson murders and Sharon Tate. What I find interesting about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is that it is the indie film equivalent of a huge hit. It's quite possibly probably going to cross 100 million at the box office, which for an art house film is, you know, but it's Tarantino. And I
right.
think once Inglourious Basterds came out, he brought a lot of people from sort of the mainstream multiplex crowd that normally wouldn't go see that kind of movie. And I think he actually occupies a really interesting midpoint between the multiplex crowd and the art house, in that people know that they're going to go see one of his movies, they're going to get entertained, but they're also going to, you know, go for an interesting ride that might challenge them.
Tarantino's kind of an interesting figure. He's had kind of mixed reports of what it's like working for him.
Yep.
He had a flare-up with Uma Thurman at one point. You know, there was kind of a big backlash when news came out that he was the hands choking her in
yep.
the Kill Bill and,
yep.
and did the same thing in Inglourious Basterds. What do you make of Quentin Tarantino in the post-Me Too era and kind of how that affects his legacy, if at all?
I do think he was a young brat of a filmmaker, and I'm sure you can call him on stuff that he and certainly he endangered Uma Thurman in you know the stunt that went wrong in Kill
the car
Bill,
crash, right?
Right. And he should be held to account for that. I also think he's maturing as a filmmaker. One of the things I like about the new film is that there is a breadth of characterization, of maturity, of dare I say it, wisdom to it, which you know I. As all good filmmakers, as all good personal filmmakers, you know, you grow, you change, you let your life experiences inform the work that you make. So, you know, the biography is what it is, and it should be discussed, and he should be held to account for the things he's done, as should everybody. But I also think that the work is showing that he is a different filmmaker than he was when he started out with Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. How about the flip side of that? On the other side of the camera, this kind of nostalgia for something that's set in a different time when we were thinking differently, how does that survive in this world, in our current cultural moment?
Well, you know, there have been people who have strained a sort of lengthy link Once Upon a Time in Hollywood to 2019. And aside from the fact that 1969 was a particularly violent year, as was 1968, and we're living in a particularly violent times, I don't think Tarantino's working with any particular parallels. He wants to recreate that world with great fondness and great detail and right the wrong that happened and that seemed to tilt the culture off its axis.
All right, 30 seconds or so. What's one movie that you think people should definitely see this summer and why?
Oh, dear. Aside from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I would say go see The Farewell, which is this lovely little film by Lulu Wang, starring Awkwafina in a dramatic role about a Chinese-American woman from New York who goes back to China to visit her grandmother who's dying of cancer, but nobody's told her. They're told her they're making up a wedding, so they'll have one last time to be with grandma. It's a lovely, humane movie, very contemplative, not fast-paced, but it's really rich, and everybody I know who's seen it really enjoys it.
All right. Well, that's Ty Burr, film critic and cultural columnist for the Boston Globe. Ty, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Jamie Bologna, Zoe Mitchell, Paris Alston, and Walt Wuthman. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Chris Siderick. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.